Okay, prayers by Queen Kunti, text number 31, translation. My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes, and you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. Report. Here is another explanation of the bewilderment created by the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme in all circumstances, as already explained. Here is a specific example of the Lord's being the Supreme, and at the same time, a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. The Lord's pure devotee renders service unto the Lord out of unalloyed love only, and while discharging such devotional service, the pure devotee forgets the position of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord also accepts the loving service of his devotees more relishably than the service rendered when the service is rendered spontaneously out of pure affection, without anything of reverential admiration. Generally, the Lord is worshipped by the devotees in a reverential attitude, but the Lord is meticulously pleased when the devotee, out of pure affection and love, considers the Lord to be less important than himself. The Lord's pastimes in the abode of Gokula, Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, are exchanged in that spirit. The friends of Krishna consider him one of them. They do not consider him to be of reverential importance. The parents of the Lord, who are all pure devotees, consider him a child only. The Lord accepts the chastisements of the parents more cheerfully than the prayers of the Vedic hymns. Similarly, he accepts the reproaches of his fiancés more palatably than the Vedic hymns. When Lord Krishna was present in this material world to manifest his eternal pastimes of the transcendental realm, Goloka Vrindavan, as an attraction for the people in general, he displayed a unique picture of subordination before his foster mother, Yashoda. The Lord, in his naturally childish playful activities, used to spoil the stocked butter of Mother Yashoda by breaking the pot and distributing the remnants to his friends and playmates, including the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan, who took advantage of the Lord's munificence. Mother Yashoda saw this, and out of pure love, she wanted to make a show of punishment for her transcendental child. She took a rope and threatened the Lord that she would tie him up, as is generally done in the ordinary household. Seeing the rope in the hands of Mother Yashoda, the Lord bowed down his head and began to weep just like a child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. This picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi because she is conscious of the Lord's supreme position. He is feared often by fear personified, yet he is afraid of his mother, who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yashoda was not. Therefore, Yashoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. Mother Yashoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. If Mother Yashoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord, but she was made to forget this situation because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate mother, Yashoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way, and Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love Indirectly, Mother Yasoda prays for her unique position of love, for she could control even the all-powerful Lord as her beloved child. Omagana Chimirandacha Kananjana Shalakaya Chakura Militanyena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vikam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Purijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vancha Kapa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo. And we could go on. Now this pastime is basically the most relishable and worshipable of all pastimes for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So next month is the Damodar month, and then we'll study that daily and sing that song. It's such a wonderful prayer. And in that prayer it says, you know, that I don't care for any opulences of Vaikuntha or any kind of liberation or anything. I only want to remember the childhood pastimes of Krishna. So for the mundane people that sounds like it's just some sentiment and stories. And, you know, even many people think like that. They'll think, yes, I heard those stories from my grandmother when I was a child, the Indian people. And it's for old ladies and children, you know, but we have to do some kind of tapasya, or we have to work, you know, work is worship, or some kind of Mayavadi thing. But these childhood pastimes are the topmost extat, you know, manifestations of the Lord's loving reciprocation with the devotees in the highest realm of Goloka, where there's no awe and reverence. It's all, in Vaikuntha, everyone is happy there, that they like worshipping in awe and reverence, and Krishna likes accepting it. But it's another level, and it doesn't mean that we should just become very casual and just worship, say, well, I don't have to worry about awe and reverence, or, you know, doing nice deity worship on time or anything. It's come to a higher level. To come to that level is by Vaidhi Bhakti, by regulated life. But our activities of kirtan, harinam, preaching, these are coming up to that, getting some kind of spontaneous, whatever we do, we have our duties, but when we do more voluntarily, do try to do more service, then that's especially appreciated by Krishna. And so Krishna comes and he lets us dress in and, you know, have quite intimate association. Cooking for someone is intimate association. Generally, nowadays, it's not. Most people don't cook at home, right? They eat in all these restaurants where it's all cooked in a factory somewhere, and marriages don't last very long because there's no loving exchanges. When I was young, they used to say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. You know, if the wife is a really good cook, then the husband is. In Indian families, it's still more of that. At least old people, and even that in Bombay, they still have those guys who bring the tiffins from the villages. And even some Western people went to study how they do that, you know, how they keep track of everything. They get on the train with, you know, 50 tiffins, and somehow they bring them all to the right office, and Because if they want to eat their wife's cooking, there's a loving exchange. They say your mother's cooking is the best, and then the mother's cooking for her children. But nowadays, the mother just gives the children $5 or whatever, and they go somewhere. I'm making more money now, I don't know, and they just eat some junk, so the children aren't attached either to the home, to their mother. So that Krishna allows us to have that intimate relation with Him if we have that consciousness that when we're cooking for the deities, it's for Krishna, and Krishna's eating it, and He's appreciating it. And then He gives it back. So it's all prasadam, and everyone can benefit by eating prasadam. A special mercy of the Lord, how He comes in the form of the deity. And so we see these rasas with the motherly rasas, the soda and Sachimata especially. Sachimata would cooking for Lord Chaitanya all the time. She had deities also, Krishna Balaram, and sometimes they would turn into Gornatai and all kinds of things. Sometimes after Lord Chaitanya had left for Puri, she would offer to her deities, and then when she'd come back, and there'd be nothing on the plate. And she was bewildered, because she actually, Sachimata went a little crazy when Lord Chaitanya left. She went into a transcendental ecstasy of separation, and she was old anyway. So she would think, maybe I didn't put anything, maybe I just spaced out, and I put empty plates on the altars. Or sometimes she thinks some monkey must have come in or something and eaten it. And then she'd do it all over again, So when, one of those associates was going to Navadvipa, Lord Chaitanya told him, please tell my mother that I come there sometimes and eat the offering. Because she's bewildered. She doesn't understand what happens. So tell her that I do come. That's why it's gone. Has that happened to anyone here? Any pujari? Cook? You come on and everything's gone. So I've seen in some temples we find a lot of Mahaprasadam under the altar or something, but that's after the pujaris put it there. So they can get some. But the offering is still there. They do offer it, and they let Krishna eat it. And so, that can be done, and sometimes we're just ritualistically offering to Krishna, because that's what we're supposed to do. In the home, we may have deities, but, oh, my kids are hungry, and I'm cooking, just put it on the altar and then pick it up. So it looks the same, but then someone else may be thinking, oh, I want to feed like Mother Yasoda. She's always worried that Krishna is hungry, or Krishna is going to get, not getting proper food, or, Krishna's not got shoes on and he's going to hurt his feet. Someone was saying, they asked Prabhupada once, I'm worried about this and that, and doing my service, and is that transcendental anxiety? And Prabhupada said, Mother Yasoda, who is always worried about Krishna, she's worried, is Krishna getting enough food? Is Krishna safe in the forest? Is Krishna this and that? That's transcendental anxiety. He said, you're worried about yourself. He said, that's not transcendental anxiety. That's ordinary anxiety. Getting there. And she's completely never, just like a mother, even in the mundane world, Prabhupada said, that's as close as we can come to pure love. A good mother, and almost anyone, they completely forget about their own everything for some time with the baby. Sometimes the mother, the three or four children, and when the child of diseases come, and one child after another gets it. By the time she finishes taking care of one, the next one gets it, And then finally at the end, the mother gets it. She didn't sleep for a month or something. But she never thought about it. All she cared about was the children and taking care of them. So that's how the pure devotees are for Krishna. And that's how we want to meditate on them and think about them and remember them. because these childhood pastimes, and even just like the Krishna's killing demon childhood pastimes, that just by hearing about them and meditating on that, we can get freed from all the different bad qualities that we have, all the demoniac qualities. That each demon's representing different ones. They do overlap, but, you know, deceit and pride and anger, you know, all the different demons that Krishna killed in Vrindavan. So we can't just pound these things out of our consciousness, you know, artificially. In some kinds of meditation, or even in, they don't even call it meditation, but, you know, people try to control these things, but it becomes artificial. But just by absorbing and hearing about Krishna's pastimes and letting Krishna take care of everything, then we can get free from all our anarthas. So the pure devotees, they just out of love, they serve Krishna. Just want to see Krishna happy, that's all. And he plays with his friends, and, you know, they joke with him. They tell him he's a nonsense, and sometimes they have mock fights, and Krishna loses, and then he has to carry someone on his back. But at the same time, the coward boys know something that, you know, that Krishna is far superior to them in every way. And when there's a big danger, they just think, and there's no problem, Krishna will help. Even the biggest demon, they get a little scared, but then they realize, Krishna's, don't worry. Krishna takes care of us. Krishna ate the forest fire, you know, twice. That's also an important lila. It says that, you know, when there's fighting, sectarian different disagreements and party politics and everything, by meditating on that lila, the Krishna eating the forest fire, that stops that. Like a few verses back, Kunti says that, or maybe, I don't know, a few verses ahead, but that the dissension among the people is just due to social interaction. So just like in the forest, sometimes the fire starts by the wind just banging the trees together, then there's some sparks, and if it's very, very dry, the fire will start. When we were young, they always showed us how the American Indians started their fire. You know, they have some stick and some way get it moving fast on another piece of wood, and then little sparks, and they throw some little stuff. Actually, I saw in Hawaii, we went to one display, and so the guys from one of the islands, Samoa, they were showing how he was quite funny, but they had two kind of sticks. They just rub the sticks together and then they get sparks. He said, well, you click your bicks, we rub our sticks. But it works. That, you know, that's what the cigarette lighter, it's just rubbing two things together, makes a spark, light something on fire. Previously, brahmanas could light fires by mantra. But also that, you know, rubbing things. So, we put lots of people together, we bump into each other, we disagree with each other, and then we can have, it can get really bad, it can be minor, happens even in a family. So, you know, the dissent among the people, but by meditating on Krishna eating up the forest fire, and then if we just, you know, everybody, we all get absorbed in Krishna, then all those little stupid things that make us disagree with each other, we can overlook them and see how we can make progress, you know, by coming to find, you know, what we should really do. Even the materialists say, if everyone agreed with you, then if you know, if the person, like your partner, always agreed with you, then one of you is not necessary. You know, you don't need two people then. Even I saw one Jewish guy, and he was saying, like, if everybody was just like me, he said, it would be a really boring world, you know, just, you look around, everyone looks just like you, and everyone talks like you, and, you know, nobody's different. Wouldn't be, if everyone's exactly the same. Right? One temple president once, he wrote to Prabhupada that the devotees were not agreeing with him on every way, or they weren't, you know, and Prabhupada said, you're trying to be Mayavadi. He said, you want everyone to be exactly the same. That's not, you know, our philosophy is everyone's individual. So by thinking it is the easiest simplest meditation is, you know, these Krishna pastimes. So that's why the Damodar month is, you know, everybody likes it. And so many devotees go to Vrindavan, and you can't even hardly get in the temple room for people offering their lamps. The line goes way out to the road outside. Everybody wants to offer their lamp to the deities. And they sing that song, and all over Vrindavan, every temple has got that going on. And you're remembering, you know, Krishna's Damodar Leela. And that's just offering the lamp, that's, you know, that can be in any kind of mood, but that's important. But the real thing is, most important is to remember the Leelas of Krishna. So this one everybody knows, but we don't mind hearing it again and again and again. You know, Krishna was mad at his mother because she put him down when she was giving him breast milk, because the milk was boiling over on the stove, and then so he broke the butter pots, and other times he was, you know, he would feed all his friends. One time he was even feeding the monkeys, and then the monkeys were so full they weren't even taking anymore. And when they came and chastised him, he said, "What do you care? This butter is no good anyway. The monkeys won't even eat it. You know, why are you upset?" And, you know, the gopis, they relished having Krishna come, but they would complain to Mother Yasoda that your son is breaking in and stealing our yogurt, and then he would say he didn't, and Mother Yasoda would believe him, and then she'd believe them, and she'd say, "Okay, I'm going to chastise him." And then they'd say, no, please don't chastise him. They just wanted to talk about Krishna. And, you know, like if anybody's naughty, then they get more attention, right? Everybody talks about the naughty boy in the class, not the good one. You know, the teacher will rarely call home to tell the mother how good the boy is, you know. But as soon as he does something naughty, at least now that my sister told me, like the teacher was, "Well, your son didn't do his homework, you know, what kind of mother are you, you know, you're really failing in your duties." But the boys who do really good, maybe they get a nice report card, but nobody talks about it very much, you know. The bad ones get all the attention. And that's one reason why we have so many naughty people. And also when we're training devotees, you know, if we're always just pointing out what they're doing wrong, then they just do more things wrong, because then they get attention. The best thing is to look for the good, you know, and find out the same thing for any kind of preaching, you know, point out that, look for the good. We become negative, and like new people come and we just look for all the reasons why they can't become devotees. And then we think, okay, you know. Even one temple they were saying, they just look at me and go, "He'll last 1 month, he'll last 2 months, you know." It wasn't like that. It should be like everybody were thinking, here's a spirit soul, and, you know, they come to the temple, it's special mercy of the Lord that they've come here. There's no accident that they come to the temple, for whatever reason, whatever kind of condition they're in. And we try to, you know, make them lifetime devotees. It doesn't always work, but people always come back, no matter what, life after life, we're coming back because Krishna is all attractive. So Krishna, he gets equally absorbed in these leelas, and he doesn't think of himself as, "I'm the Supreme Lord and everybody should bow down." He doesn't ever ask for that. But some devotees like that, like the Vaikuntha, they like that. That's their mood. And they're not aware of it, you know, the Goloka. Like when Gopa Kumar went to Vaikuntha, you know, they were bewildered. He embraced the Lord, and they think, "You can't do that," you know. And he was still dressed like a colored boy, which is not like really dressed up very much. And they told him, "You should dress like us, you know. You should be all opulent." He didn't like that. He was in this mood, and Krishna liked him also, and even though it was Vishnu Loka. And the gopis will chastise Krishna, and especially Radharani's group, especially Lalita Shakhi, is known for chastising Krishna. And he likes that. And they get really angry at him. And he likes it. Satyabhama in Dwarka was like that too. She demanding and envious of the other wives. And Krishna liked that. He had to take her with him when he went to the heavenly planets to get a parijata flower. Because she wanted one. So let's see what else is here. So Krishna, these Vrindavan pastimes, Krishna had brought them down, you know, so that they could be exposed and the people in the mature world could know about them and develop the desire to, you know, go back to Godhead to be with Krishna. Such relishable things. And so it's remembered by, and now by Prabhupada's grace, of course, it's become more and more known all over the world. Krishna. And, you know, this baby Krishna, everyone likes that. The picture, the Krishna book, you know, we've been distributing that since 1971 or 72. It was, you know, devotees are distributing that. Big Krishna books, and you know, Prabhupada, that first volume of the original Krishna book, Prabhupada designed it, that, you know, was so big, and with the really big writing, Prabhupada, that was his design. The cover was actually designed by the Japanese, the Dainippon Printing Company. The picture was given to them, that they made the silver color and all that. And that first volume, it was two volumes originally, had something like 64 pictures. And the second volume had 32, I think. So Prabhupada, the book was ready, but he waited until all the paintings were finished, you know, before they would print it. He really wanted everybody to have all those pictures of Krishna. It's all childhood pastimes, and they're very sweet. Even though the artists were technically, you know, maybe not perfect, that their pictures look exactly, because Prabhupada told us they're windows to the spiritual world. They're not exactly like the material world. The spiritual world is different, you know. And it's all full of innocence and love. And those things came out because the devotees were really feeling that. So, and we would just tell people these pictures are windows to the spiritual world, and you can just go to the spiritual world just by looking at them. And people like that. But we're still selling those books all over the world, and it still attracts people. And sometimes it's people that I was telling people. There's one Mataji that in London, and she actually remembers her previous life. She was a brahmachari, and she got initiated by Prabhupada in Scotland, and then the next day there was a car accident and died. So she had so many memories of the whole thing, and checked out everything. Many we don't know for sure like that, but like one boy, he showed up in Japan. He's from San Francisco, and when he was like 18 years old, he started getting, you know, interested in spiritual things. So his mother had a Krishna book that she got in 1973 or something, and she never read it. Or maybe she looked at it. So she said, well, I should read this one, you know. So he read it and became completely fanatic Hare Krishna, you know, just by reading that book. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, ISKCON, everything. So when Vaisheshika Prabhu met him in Japan, he said everything they told him, he just, yeah. He said he was definitely an ISKCON devotee in his previous life, you know. In fact, Vaish thought that he might even been the devotee that sold the book to his mother. And then somehow or other, you know, because we don't know, like, you know, there's so many devotees, the Prabhupada disciples and onward also that have come and lived in the temple for a few months, even a few years. In those early days, nobody knew anything. They didn't know anybody's last name. They didn't know where they came from. They just came and joined, and then they would go away, and nobody had any way of ever looking for them. And still that goes on. So there's devotees everywhere. We just met one boy that Shiki met in Alabama, and he used to be on my Radha-Damodar bus and distribution in the airports. He was a very young boy when he joined, very sweet. But somehow he left, and now Shiki met him, and he's, again, now he's chanting 16 rounds, and he's just, he's got a Sika, and he said, I'm distributing book, I preach everywhere, and everybody loves it. Everybody loves to hear about Krishna. He said, everybody, it's amazing, all the people at work and everywhere I go, and they just, everybody wants to hear about Krishna. He said, now I just give them books, though. He said, I don't have to get money, you know, because he used to distribute books at Elvis Presley's house. And that's a huge tourist place, you know, there's miles of line of people waiting. And he did really good there. But also, he said he'd get so much donation he couldn't give out enough books. But there was demons also that would come all the time and break everything up. But somehow he had some, you know, some curiosity about the material life and got all entangled for a few years. But then he's back. And there's devotees like that all over the world. There's thousands of them. Some from this life, some from previous life. Just waiting. Just waiting for to meet another devotee and get connected again. All of us. So we have that duty to, you know, let people know about Krishna and connect with Krishna more and more. We hear about these things. We hear about these great devotees and pure devotees. We can't imitate them, and, you know, we can't imitate someone like Bhamsi Das Babaji. He just carried his deity around like this, you know, and he had a Gopal, no, his servant carried the Gornatai, and he had a Gopal, and he just talked to him all the time.
He would yell at him.
If he was fasting, sometimes he wouldn't make an offering for a couple of days. Sometimes he'd make an offering at midnight off a raw eggplant, you know. But he was certified by Bhakti Siddhanta to be the one genuine Babaji, you know. The one, and he would send his servants to get the remnants of his, you know, his prasad to give to everyone in the ashram, because he was such a great devotee. But we can't say, well, I'll do that also. I'll just offer whenever I feel like it, and, you know. If I'm not hungry, I won't give any offering, and I've seen that even in some of our temples. Well, there's no one to eat the prasadam, so we don't offer anything. Dr. So-and-so doesn't care about eating yesterday's prasadam, so nobody cooked it. But Krishna's eating, you know. Krishna's the Supreme Person. So like if I go to a temple, or anybody's house, you know, the first thing they want to know is, what do you want to eat before you get there? If you tell them a week before, what does he want to eat, what does he eat, what does he eat, what can we cook, you know? Because they know I'm a person, and they think persons have to eat. But Krishna doesn't have to eat, but we have to feed him. We have to do everything for him. That's his special mercy. And when we do that, of course we eat, we don't have to worry, because if we cook what's, you know, suitable for Krishna, then you have the best food in the universe. Because he's the Supreme Lord. So if we cook, you know, we should be making everything absolutely best. And in this material world, it's hard to get anything good, even bhoga that's good. But, you know, we have to do our best. And then Krishna sanctifies it and makes it good. Otherwise, if you get all the best organic bhoga and, you know, all the, but you don't offer, it's not offered to Krishna, then it's just sin, useless. Many people don't realize that. They're just so busy trying to get everything right materially. And devotees are trying to make everything nice for Krishna, and then everything else. People are so bewildered to decorate their bodies, for instance. Lord Chaitanya said that, right? You know, the Bengali? Which verse is it? You spend your days decorating your body and your nights sleeping. So how many shops are there for beds? You know, $500, $600, $10,000 for a bed. You know, but you can sleep on that. You know, you need a little bit to protect you from the cold, but you can sleep, at least I can sleep better without the bed, you know. But, and then not only the mattress they pay, but then they have to have a big, you know, fancy... Some devotees just moved in an apartment in London. It was a small apartment. You know, it's not really small, but it had actually only two rooms. Both of them had these huge beds. The one that, to go through the back, you had to trip over the bed to get to the bathroom, and it filled up, you know, left about this much space. And it had a very heavy wooden, you know, that bed cost £2,000. It's $4,000. And then they told the landlord, we don't want this bed, you know, and he said, where am I going to put it, you know, because nobody will buy it when it's old. And they sell it for $100 or something, you know, because it's old. But the person will go to the shop and buy the new one for, you know, and that's as much, that wasn't carved wood or anything, that's just plain wood, you know. And so they, and what to speak of how much they spend for decorating their body. Because I go in many countries, and you know, when we go for Harinam, we go in the busy place. And almost every shop, you know, clothes, shoes, right? Jewelry. We were driving to the temple in Hong Kong in one street, and every shop was a jewelry shop. Gold. Hundreds of them. And both sides of the street. And I said, when is this ever going to end, you know? And so you decorate your body. Cosmetics. You go into department stores and half the first floor is just cosmetics. And they're very expensive. And they got the, you know, decorating your body. And then cosmetic surgery. That's advertised everywhere. There's one in Los Angeles, right across from the temple, there's some clinic. And the big sign says, look 5 years younger in 1 hour. Change your body, you know, get a new one. Lose 30 pounds, and I just saw some juice in the supermarket yesterday, and it said lose so many pounds in so many days. Lose 13 pounds in 15 days or something. Just drink this, you know, this juice that burns up fat or something, you know. Change body, decorate your body, get a suntan. Even here they have that, right? In Northern Europe, everywhere is this solarium, they call it, you know, or suntan. Well, I saw one really exclusive shop in Dublin, and it had wigs and suntan and fake fingernails. The fake fingernail I saw one shop, and that was the most expensive thing they had. It was a, you know, hair shop with the plastic fingernail. They have to sit there for a couple hours when they make them, and then stick their hands in a little oven and bake it. Then they have to be very careful, you know, not to break them. The devotee said it's always good for, when they go in those shops, it's good for book distribution. People are just bored, you know. But decorating the body, it's a huge industry, you know, the clothes and fashion, and then what to speak of all the magazines to tell you which fashion you should have. And they're just crazy. And then all the cosmetics they have. In Japan, they have a huge business for cosmetics for children. You know, 10-year-old children have a big bag full of cosmetics. They have these big magazines, and they're studying. And they're getting the right clothes, and the right shoes, and the right haircut. And, you know, that's one of the reasons the demons are, you know, they're not very enthusiastic to have everyone become a Hare Krishna. You know, because all those businesses would really suffer. They think everybody, there'd be no economy. Right? Devotees get, you know, a little bit, they'd shave and buy a few things, hopefully not too many. You know, a little bit cosmetic, but not like, they said the average woman in America before they leave the house, they put 9 things on their face. And men also, about 8, something like that. You know, so they have to put shaving cream and after shaving, and then a little paint here and, you know, fix the eyebrows. And I've seen girls, you know, American girls, they say they can drive their car on a mountain road and put on makeup with the other hand, you know, and talk on the phone at the same time. I've seen Japanese girls on the motorbike just pull over and start putting on makeup. Get out the mirror and start fixing up. So decorating the body, when I joined, they always told us the more you chant, your spiritual body becomes more beautiful and more beautiful. That sounded pretty good, you know. And, you know, devotees always look nice because they're happy. Someone is miserable, then no matter how much nice clothes they have on and how much, you know, some of these haircuts cost, you know, a few $100. And the dresses, these movie stars, $10,000, $50,000 for one dress. They wear it one time just to get a few pictures. But we dress Krishna, and then by decorating Krishna and dressing Krishna, that idea that we should decorate our own body becomes lost. We become satisfied to decorate Krishna, and he's so beautiful. And Krishna beautifies the decorations. Like, at first the gopis told Mother Yasoda that their jewelry is bright, and therefore they can find the yogurt in the dark. And they put it in a tunnel, a cave, or underground. And then Mother Yasoda said, okay, I'll take away all their jewelry. And they said, no, that's actually their body is so effulgent that the jewelry becomes dull on the body of Krishna. So and these things are always interesting to hear again and again. It should be. And if we keep hearing them, just like we keep chanting, we keep taking prasad, everything gets better and better all the time. And we get to more close to Krishna, more ability to understand Krishna, and know Krishna, to know the holy name. So many devotees are going to these japa retreats and, you know, just absorbing and only chanting the holy name and hearing about the glories of the holy name. And everybody comes out like just completely in line. But it changes their life. It's a real life-changing experience. There's so many seminars that say they change your life, but a few weeks later they have to go to another one, another one, another one, another one. They get addicted to it. But the japa, of course, we want to do it, but you want to do it more and more. It's not like, oh, I have to chant. Sometimes people say, oh, you can't eat meat, right? Or you can't watch television. No, we don't want to. You know, it's not like we can't, like we're in some religion that just says you can't do anything. I remember telling people that, you know, the regulated principles, and they'd say, what do you do for fun? We couldn't imagine that we're having so much fun, that those things are miserable. Even Saturday, someone offered Hanumat Prasaka Maharaj some rice or something, and then she said, oh yeah, you can't eat grains. She said, no, I can't, I don't want to. You know, it's all voluntary, but you know, if you want to make spiritual advancements, and of course you don't want it, you can't eat meat, and you can't, you know, spend your whole day watching television. But if you want to, you can do that. If you want to get absorbed in misery, want to suffer. I told many times, Jai Dwaitamar, a policeman actually pulled over one time in New York City in the morning. He said, what do you have to do to be a Hare Krishna? So he said, well, you have to give up all suffering. And the policeman said, wow, that sounds good. And he went to the temple and bought some books. That's what we give up. We give up suffering. We give up misery. We give up anxiety. We give up, you know, fear. But Krishna pretended to be afraid of his mother, like any baby, you know. And then after she tied him up and he broke down the trees and everything, all the other women were chastising his soda. Why? You're crazy. Why do you tie him up? Look what happened. Because he pulled down those big trees. you know, punishing him, she can't think that this is the Supreme Lord. And a couple times she, like when she looked in Krishna's mouth and saw the whole universe, you know, and she realized, then she, no, this is my baby. And she don't want to think of him as having the whole universe inside his mouth. A couple times he showed her, but she just forget immediately. She didn't want to see that. She didn't want to think of Krishna like that. So fear personified, that's in the first canon also, that fear personified is afraid of the holy name of Krishna. So those who are chanting the holy name all the time are protected. They won't be fearful. We might be in anxiety that we want to do our service for Krishna. You know, we should be afraid of Maya. Once Prabhupada said, the problem with my disciples is they're not afraid enough of Maya. You know, we think, well, we can, you know, we can play around with Maya a little bit. But then it's like the spider web, you know. If you touch, the fly touches one place and maybe one foot gets stuck or something. So he tries to pull himself off from another and that one gets stuck, and then pretty soon he's completely stuck. But that's how the material energy works. If we jump in a little bit, then we get stuck here, then we try to get out. If we get out by material means, we get stuck on this side, that side, this side, and get completely wrapped up. But as soon as we ask Krishna to pull us out, then he pulls us right out. Right? Mama Maya Duratyaya, Mama Tamye Prapajanti. When the Maya is very difficult to overcome, but when one surrenders to Krishna, then he just takes us right out. He tells Maya, leave him alone now, let him out. Open the doors, open the gates, like prison. Sometimes in the prison, the king can come in, or the president, and he can let people out. To say, okay, he gets out now. And then you can get out, but on your own, you can't get out. And I heard a very good example, I'll end with that, Radhana Swami gave. See, if you're in the prison, like Maya is a prison house in the material world, but inside the prison, if you're, you know, being a good prisoner, then they don't pay much attention to you. You just go here and work, go there and eat, go there and sleep, you know. But if you try to escape, if someone escapes from the prison, then there are pictures all over the television, and the sirens are going, and the dogs are chasing him, and everybody's thinking about that guy, trying to find him again. So we find a lot of times when someone tries to come to join the temple, then all kinds of things happen. In different countries it's different, you know. You know, the parents try to find him, the mother gets sick and they're calling him, you've got to come home, and they lose their job, and like all kinds of things happen to make it hard to join, because they're trying to get out from Maya, so Maya tries to get him back. Right? One boy in Israel, his parents were calling his old girlfriend and saying, you gotta go get him. You know, he's out distributing Krishna books, and you gotta go get him back, you know. He tried everything. Offer so much money, you know. But if they're just in Maya, then nobody pays any attention to them. You're just peacefully in Maya, then Maya doesn't have to go out of the way. So we have to give people Krishna, you know, all these people that they have so much, you know, attachments, but if they get the prasadam, they get the holy name, they get association, if they like to read, they get a book, or they get free. It's happened to all of us. We all get rescued. All right, any comments, questions? Yes, sir.
Mark, speaking about Lord Krishna, he was in Vrindavan at the time that when Maharaj Yashoda chased Krishna.
In Vrindavan.
Yeah,
of course. Mother Yashoda was always in Vrindavan.
No, Kunti.
Kunti, no. I don't think she ever went to him. She just knew him.
Kunti Maharaj.
Kunti was in Hastinapur. I never heard of Kunti being in Vrindavan.
I had a few in Vrindavan and she saw it and she actually
I never heard that, it could be.
Kunti Maharaj, she was a daughter of Bhakti. She was a sister of Nandamara.
Sister Vasudeva.
Possibly.
So she was in Hastinapur because but I never heard of the Pandavas going to Vrindavan, even though Hastinapur is so close, so she could have gone easy enough.
I think maybe she saw
Krishna
by any hand.
Yeah, she could, maybe she could. I never heard read anywhere and saw the name of Kunti being there. But.
Bhaya Bhavanaya means personified, the fear personified fear of Krishna. Here it's mentioned about fear personified with Jama, Bhaya Bhavanaya.
Fear, everything is personified sometimes, so I don't know what fear personified exactly looks like. But even fear itself is afraid of Krishna. So that's, you know, why we want to take shelter of Krishna. See, like when Kunti met Vasudeva and she was wondering why he never helped her when she was in so much distress. He said, well, I was in prison. You know, I couldn't do anything. Kamsa was, they were all suffering in so many different ways. And that's another, you know, Krishna arranges those things so that some people think, well, I don't want to be a devotee of Krishna. Look what happens. You know? Right? Even Yudhisthira told that. I guess it was Narada, he said, don't tell anybody that I'm a great devotee because, you know, they won't want to be a devotee then, for how much we suffer. Yeah. She knew about it. Bhishma knew also. Bhishma knew about the gopis and everything, but he didn't go to Vrindavan. Somehow they know. Bhishma talked about it, you know, but he aspired for a different rasa with Krishna. Okay. But then Bhishma must be somebody coming also from Goloka, but you know, in the Leela he's a Vasu or something. But that Vasu is not an ordinary Vasu. We were just reading last night of it. Just like Krishna can be in many places at the same time in different forms, so-called incarnations, and the great devotees of Goloka, they can do that also. So like all the wives of Krishna in Dwarka, they were actually expansions of the gopis of Vrindavan. So they could fulfill their desire to be married to Krishna. But they were still in Vrindavan crying, where is Krishna? At the same time. Yeah. So that's why we say achintya, it's inconceivable. And then the materialists, they just say, yeah, it's not possible. They don't want to hear anything, but they just want to build atom smashers or, you know, make so-called spaceships to go and explore and, you know, figure everything out. But they don't figure anything out. They just get more bewildered. So the materialists are bewildered by the material energy of Krishna, so they're really bewildered by Krishna, and the devotees are bewildered by Krishna's activities. And even the material energy is bewildering. That's why if we get absorbed in it, we just become lost. It's unlimitedly bewildering. And the modes of nature can combine in unlimited different ways. All right, good. So we want to get more people and reach out somehow or other and go more places and tell people about Krishna. I went to the bank yesterday and just at the Publix. Mm-hmm. You know the Publix?
Yeah, right.
It's quite close, right?
Yeah.
And the guy was very nice. He said, are you a Buddhist monk? And I said, Hare Krishna. He said, oh yeah, Hare Krishna. I see those guys sometimes. you know. So we're not out preaching enough as it used to be. People used to know Hare Krishna and see it. That happened to me. So I was in one airport, and I went in the shop, and I don't know, I was looking for water or something, but I picked up a bottle of water, and then the lady that worked there, she was actually from Burma or something. And she said, "Oh, you're a Buddhist, you know, oh, let me buy it, let me buy it, let me buy it." I said, "You're a Buddhist, right?" So I said, "Yeah, I didn't argue." You know, she knew I was a monk, so she paid for the water. Then another guy came, and he was like a Paka guy, he's actually a college professor. And he started telling me how good Buddhism was. And he was really friendly. He was a Muslim. So he was trying to show that Muslims appreciate everyone. Then I told him Hare Krishna, and he was interested, and he went away chanting. You know, now the Buddhists are somehow, even though there's not very many Buddhist monks around, somehow or other, when people see the robe and the shaved head, they think you're Buddhist. But somehow they know about Buddhists. And there was a time, you know, there was signs in airports, you know, they advertised in the airport, you know, use this space. So they had a big sign, and they showed a monk. It didn't look exactly like a Hare Krishna, shaved head and orange. And it said, "Airport advertising works." Because even though we hardly ever went in an airport in a ODM shaved head, only in the very beginning, we had to wear, you know, wigs and everything. It was too conspicuous. And, because what would happen, we could sell the same number of books, but the nice people like it, but the demons would see us from far away, you know, and then they'd start making trouble. So we had to sneak around, so they didn't know exactly what we were doing. But somehow we were famous, the Hare Krishnas, you know, and any people knew. But some people get really confused. Even when that Rajneesh people, they had long hair and beards and grubby looking and bright red robes, right? But even when they came to Vrindavan and they were kissing in the middle of Louis Bazaar, and they called the temple and say, "Why are your people doing this?" Because they're foreigners. They think all foreigners in Vrindavan are from the Congress of London. And on the airplane sometimes they'd ask, "Are you going to Pune?" Because they got famous, you know. That red color, it's completely red, you know, like this thing she's making. You know? That's the way they dress. And long, grubby hair, and, you know. But so we need to be exposing ourselves more and more and letting people know what's happening. So, people are interested, you know, they like Buddhism and they're interested in it. I went in London and I went to one area where the people were mostly a little bit older and quite well off. And so many people, they were friendly with, "I do meditation," you know, meaning Buddhist. "Yeah, I do meditation." Some of them say, "Oh, yeah, I meditate, I'll take the book." And others, "I don't need it, I'm already meditating." You know, when I went to where the young people were, the kids, nobody said they were Buddhists, but they like yoga. So, yeah, yoga. I want to learn to meditate. You know. They just heard about it. But it's because the Buddhists publicize it. So people really want Krishna because they want ecstasy, they want pleasure, they want freedom from all the suffering. We have that. We can get people. So we see so many devotees living all right. I've been living for 38 years and I haven't worked or done anything. I haven't made any businesses. And somehow I'm living, so I think others can do it also. They'll say, no, you're special. No. Krishna is special, so if you just surrender to Krishna, you don't have to worry. If you want to do it yourself, then you have to worry. You know, then you can only get your karma. You can only get what, you know. And sometimes if you try to be a devotee but you're confused, you won't even get your karma when you try to do it yourself. because Krishna is trying to pull you back. You know? So you kick and kick and kick until, you know, until finally you say, all right, and I give up. I surrender. Okay? Hare Krishna. Long time. Sorry.